evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, July 29, 2016. The UN Security Council meets today to renew the mandate of the UN mission in South Sudan.
The Council is particularly upset about South Sudan because they really worked hard. I mean, I've been here for 9 years, and so I've watched how they supported South Sudan in becoming an independent country and how they tried to support it to get up on its own 2 feet.
And the South Sudan government places new visa restriction for staff of the UN mission in South Sudan.
South Sudan has its own rules and regulations, which must be respected by the foreign diplomats, which UNMISS is one of them. To be mindful of international laws, privileges and immunities.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to the United Nations headquarters, where the UN Security Council is meeting today to extend the mandate of the United Nations mission in South Sudan. VOA's correspondent at the UN headquarters in New York says members of the Security Council are concerned about the violence in South Sudan. Margaret Bashir says the Council has put South Sudan at the top of their priority list this week.
Well, the UN is extremely concerned about these reports of rapes in Juba, UNMISS compound. They're looking into reports that men in uniforms, possibly SPLA, raped women and girls who are near these protection of civilian sites. So that's something that they're very intensely focused on right now. But also the Security Council has a deadline in front of it, and it needs to renew the mandate for the peacekeeping mission, UNMISS.
The UN Security Council has been meeting on several occasions on matters to do with South Sudan. But it seems like some countries have not been agreeing on any tangible action. Could you talk to us a little bit about that? For instance, there was supposed to be a vote on arms embargo, sanctioning leaders in South Sudan, but there were countries blocking them.
Right.
Yeah.
There's still not any agreement, I think, on an arms embargo, but it is not off the table. It's still something that the Council is willing to consider, but the point becomes they decide the situation is so bad, really, that they're going to put it in place because they do disagree about it so much. I mean, the situation has remained tense. The fighting in Juba stopped, but, you know, it's just things are still extremely tense. So today we're expecting them to do what's called a technical rollover of the mandate. So in other words, they'll authorize UNMISS to continue for a week or two while they continue negotiating among the 15 Security Council members the actual changes to the mandate. So UNMISS was there to do stabilization and to help with peace building, but because of all the violence over the past 2 years, they've had to really switch gears and focus primarily on protecting civilians. And so now there needs to be some sort of renovation, if you will, of that mandate. And one of the things they'll be considering is whether to establish some sort of a security force within UNMISS. So that's one of the things they're looking at, and they're also looking at arms embargo.
You've been working for VOA at the UN headquarters for many, many years. When the Security Council focuses on a country for quite a long time, what message is Security Council sending to, for instance, the leaders of South Sudan?
Well, I'll tell you, when they have to focus on them for so long, they're frustrated with them because they want the political stakeholders and the regional countries, too, because oftentimes we see in countries where there are problems that the neighbors are meddling also in the problems. But they want the leadership to put the interests of the people first. And in this case, for Salva Kiir and Riek Machar to put aside their personal political rivalries, their personal ambitions, and to put the people first. I mean, tens of thousands of people have died, and the Council is particularly upset about South Sudan because they really worked hard. I mean, I've been here for 9 years, and so I've watched how they supported South Sudan in becoming an independent country and how they tried to support it to get up on its own 2 feet. And then for this to happen, for a country with so much natural resources, for so, you know, a rich culture and society, for them to suffer like this unnecessarily The council is very upset about it. They're very angry, and they feel sort of betrayed, really, I think, that these leaders are abusing their people and not taking any consideration what the international community is saying.
In the backdrop of their bitterness, should the people of South Sudan expect any tangible results from these several meetings that have been going on?
Well, I think my experience at the UN is it takes time for tangible results. No matter, you know, the council can say do this or do that, but then the question becomes, will the parties they directed those instructions to obey? So I think that's really, you know, I can't say one way or the other until we see whether there's real political will on the part of the leaders of South Sudan.
That's Margaret Bashir, VOA's correspondent at the United Nations headquarters. She was speaking to me from New York this past hour. Beginning today, South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs says all foreign diplomats and officials of the United Nations mission in South Sudan planning to travel to the country must notify the government about their planned entry 72 hours in advance. The foreign ministry also ordered the Directorate of Nationality, Passports and Immigration to stop issuing visas to UNMISS officials on arrival at Juba International Airport. Tito Justin has the story for VOA from Juba.
Foreign ministry officials described the new order as a security measure to monitor things carefully following recent crisis in the country. Thomas Kenneth, acting spokesperson at the Foreign Affairs Ministry, says the changes should improve security following the recent fighting in Juba.
South Sudan has its own rules and regulations, which must be respected by the foreign diplomats, which UNMISS is one of them. To be mindful of international laws, privileges and immunities of Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations.
Kenneth says the country's security officers have been ordered to implement the orders at Juba International Airport and at all border crossing points. He says diplomats and foreigners working for enemies must now notify the ministry by giving reasons for visiting South Sudan and the length of time they intend to stay in the country, a move which contradicts the status of force agreement signed between the UN mission in South Sudan and the South Sudan government. Article 35 of the status of force agreement states that the government shall facilitate the entry into and departure from South Sudan without delay and hindrance of the UN special representative and members of the enemies. The agreement further states that the special representative and members of enemies has to be exempted from passport and visa regulations and immigration inspection and restrictions. Kenneth says the government is trying to create order.
It is not aimed at hindering the works of the UNMISS in the Republic of South Sudan, but because of the current security situation in the country, these rules and regulations are put in place so that everything is going according to the regulations.
Kenneth says non-governmental organizations and UN agencies will continue to operate normally in the country but must abide by the security order.
We are in a very critical time. We don't want them to understand that in a wrong way that we are targeting them. A foreign diplomat in the country, we need them. They need us. We need to be together because we have good relations with many countries in the world.
The order, which is effective immediately, applies to all countries in the world except neighboring East African countries. Kenneth acknowledged that the new order is mostly aimed at enemies officials who he says has many diplomats entering the country. The acting enemies spokesperson Santel Passoa did not answer our repeated calls for comment on the story. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
A legal expert in South Africa says Juba is digging its own grave by fighting the international community. Remember, Miamingi says the United Nations mission in South Sudan is representing the international community. Miamingi says any move to prevent UN officials from entering South Sudan could amount to what he calls a diplomatic blunder.
It is not an isolated, but it is a pattern of harassment that is taking place right from obstructing the movement of troops within South Sudan and personnel within South Sudan through to now extending it to their right to enter into the country.
Let's look at the status of forces agreement that the government of South Sudan signed with the United Nations mission in South Sudan in August 2011. For instance, Article 35 of the Status of Forces Agreement Article 35 says the government undertakes to facilitate the entry in and departure from South Sudan without delay or hindrance of the special representative and members of the UN mission in South Sudan, and shall be kept informed of such movement. One aspect of the agreement says the special representative and members of the UNMISS shall be exempted from passport and visa regulations and immigration inspections and restrictions. Now, this is clear that the government of South Sudan committed itself to give free access to the members of the UN mission in South Sudan. Yesterday, they said no, the mission should seek approval from them. Now, what are the implications of reneging on international treaties?
First, of course, it is a clear case of violating international agreement that has very serious national implications. As you rightly stated, the Status of Forces Agreement provides unfettered right of movement within, as well as the right to leave and re-enter the country to UN and their contractors. Now, by placing this restriction, it is that violation. Of course, there is a legal implication that we are reneging on a commitment to an organization that we are a member state, and which is the United Nations, which we celebrated our membership just a few years ago. And that is giving the international community the idea that South Sudan as a state does not honor its commitment. But it has the immediate humanitarian implication. Let us not forget that the United Nations personnel and forces in South Sudan is actually stepping in the shoe of the government, carrying out the responsibility that the government was supposed to do in the first place, protecting civilians, providing humanitarian services for them, restricting their movement to live and come in the country will have a direct implication on the ability of the United Nations and its facility within South Sudan to discharge its obligation to the people. And this, in a situation where South Sudanese, almost 5.1 million of us, are facing food, extreme food insecurity, places where there are outbreak of disease, there's serious insecurity, civilians have been raped, and restricting again is creating the impression that the government is actually trying to kick away the United Nations so that it can have the liberty to abuse, the liberty to kill, and the liberty to deal with its citizens as it wants without the eyes of the international community. And I don't think that is a good message.
No, but the government in Juba would also say they are a sovereign state and they have the right to do as they see fit.
There is no sovereignty outside the law. South Sudan is a member of the United Nations. The United Nations Convention on Immunities and Privileges of 1946 is incorporated by Article 3 of the Status of Force Agreement and therefore applicable in South Sudan. That is an exception that South Sudanese government had already entered into with its sovereign right to allow the United Nations force and its personnel operate within it. That's what we are simply saying is that since we have granted the United Nations that right under this agreement, which is a national and international agreement at the same time, that we simply abide by our commitment. We should be seen as a government, as a society that is ruled and governed by laws, national or international. So we cannot use sovereignty as an excuse to violate international laws or even our own laws.
But let us take it this way. Juba could be behaving that way in the backdrop of the fact that the international community has not punished them for whatever they have been doing. There has been a lot of killing in the country. Soldiers went and looted UN facilities. They looted WFP warehouse and took all the food. They have been blocking UN from going to other areas in the country, and nothing has happened to them. So it looks like they think the international community will not do anything to them. What is your take on that?
No, I certainly agree that the United Nations and international community has been extremely generous and magnanimous, and it is dealing with the government of South Sudan. But that generosity and patience should not be taken for inaction or stupidity.
That's Ramemba Miamingi with the Faculty of Law at the University of Pretoria, South Africa. He was speaking to me from Pretoria this past hour. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Maridi state officials say attacks along Maridi A Road outside their area are continuing. We'll have more on that story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what traditional medicines do you take, if any?
I don't take any traditional medicine as a young, active African. I think I'm strong enough. I use water and more of the fruits. I think my parents do a lot of traditional medicine.
I haven't taken traditional medicine yet. I hope I never do, because I'm biased about traditional medicine. I think people put in so much spiritual things to make sure that their medicine works, so I'm not giving it a try.
Yeah, I take, but I don't know the biological names in English. Yeah, but I take that is this Muruza. I don't know how they call it in English. And the aloe vera, Chigaji. Yeah, I take Muruza and the aloe vera for treatment of malaria. It's very good. Most of myself, I use it for myself too much.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir says he will allow a third-party security arrangement for the return to Juba of former first Vice President Riek Machar if the SPLM in opposition accepts that Riek Machar would once again take over the party leadership. The Council of Ministers also agreed to relocate the SPLA forces from the capital, but says it knows of no empty land where the forces can be relocated. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
It's been more than 2 weeks since the deadly clashes erupted between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar in South Sudan's capital. Machar disappeared from Juba on July 8th, citing safety concerns. Machar supporters say the former rebel leader is around Juba. Machar spoke to Al Jazeera television earlier this week condemning his replacement by Taban Dengai as first vice president. Machar told Al Jazeera that he would return to the capital under proper security arrangement. Government spokesperson Michael Makwe-Luet told reporters today in Juba that President Kiir would welcome Machar's return to Juba.
If Riek Machar comes back, he can be accorded the necessary protection by a third party if he so wishes. And that is in case he also takes over, if he comes back and the IO accept him taking over the seat of the chairmanship of their party, of their movement.
Machar has said he fled Juba because of the ongoing insecurity and called for foreign intervention forces to be deployed in Juba to ensure his safety and protection in the event that he returns to the capital. Makwe says the cabinet opposes the proposed deployment of African Union-backed regional troops to the country.
All the issues that they intend to be done by the intervention force in terms of protection of the civil population, in terms of protection of government installations and facilities, all these things are being done by the government and by the security organs of the government.
The IGAD brokered peace agreement provides for the demilitarization and relocation of the SPLA forces out of Juba town as part of the security arrangement for major towns across South Sudan. Makwe says the government is running into difficulties finding a spot to relocate the army out of Juba.
When the forces went outside, there came up a big problem. Some communities came in and said that their land is being grabbed. And it is not clear to us as to where do people expect the army to be put in. There is no place in the air where they will be put in. They must be put somewhere on the ground.
Makwe says the army must allocate land in order to relocate the soldiers outside the capital. Earlier this month, the African Union proposed the deployment of a foreign intervention force to protect citizens and infrastructure in the country. The South Sudan government has rejected the idea and organized a demonstration 2 weeks ago to denounce the move by the African Union. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
South Sudanese in diaspora are in Washington today to voice their concern about the troubling development in their country. The protests were supposed to start at the Capitol Hill, where members of Congress conduct business, and proceed to the White House, where they plan to urge President Barack Obama to do more for South Sudanese people. We now go live to VOA reporter Ayen Bior, who is at the scene of the protest. Ayen, can you describe to us what you are seeing where you are right now?
Hi, Tanza. I'm here with the protester Zainab, and to be honest with you, there's really not much going on. I'm here with Zainab, as I said, and her 15-year-old son. They both drove here for 10 hours from the southern state of Georgia to come to this protest. This protest, by the way, was supposed to be organized by national civil society members from across the nation. She tells me that about 5 states contributed to this protest. Unfortunately, the only people who made it were her and her son. Now, she tells me that the only reason why people have not shown up is because they say that they had to work today and they couldn't get out of prior obligations. And speaking to Zainab, she says that she's completely okay with that. She understands why people could not make it. But again, Tanza, there's really not much going on right now. We are just sitting at a bench near the Capitol building. Now, our permit expires in about 10 minutes. Zainab says that there's a few protesters who have called her and said that they are on their way, but unless they make it in the next 10 minutes, I'm afraid they're not going to make the protest.
That's our reporter, Ayen Bior, at a venue of a protest that did not kick up in Washington.
Thank you.
Maridi state officials say armed youth abducted a policeman and robbed passengers in 3 vehicles this week along the Yeyi Maridi Road in Yeyi River State Territory. The Maridi State Information Minister says there have been many other attacks on the same road, although not in Maridi State. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Yambio.
Armed youth have been repeatedly robbing and looting commuters along the Yeyi Maridi Road. A victim of the attack, who does not want to be identified for fear of being attacked again, describes what happened.
Almost recently, Monday, we met with an armed gunman. They stopped us and they took us to the bush far from the road going to Yambio. They took everything. They took from us money, our phones and laptops.
The 21-year-old says the attackers beat up the travelers and forced them to remove food items from their vehicle. She says the attack occurred about 7 in the morning as they were traveling from Yeyi to Maridi. The survivor says the armed group ordered them to return to Yeyi and threatened to kill anyone who tried to continue on to Maridi.
They forced us to smoke cigarettes and we cooked for them. They raped some of my friends. We were just like killed.
She says the vigilantes were well armed. Maridi State Information Minister Peter Saki says the attack occurred outside their territory.
In our security reports in Maridi State, we have nothing of that kind, which is about Maridi people. I'm sure maybe that is in the other side of Yeyi River State. And concerning some small groups which are maybe trying to interact with the people between Yeyi and Maridi, it is not on a daily basis.
Saki says security operatives regularly patrol the major roads and borders of the state to prevent future attacks.
We have our forces which are patrolling and monitoring all those sites between Maridi and Yeyi.
Earlier this month, Maridi State authorities said they set up a mobile military patrol to ensure security along the Yeyi Maridi Road. The former Western Equatorial State has seen a marked increase in attacks along the road this year compared to last year, although they have not all occurred in Maridi State. Gift Friday for VOA News, Yambio.
Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton urged voters Thursday not to give in to the politics of fear. She vowed to unite the country and move forward if elected in November. Clinton formally accepted Democratic Party's nomination at its national convention in Philadelphia. VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone has more.
On the final night of the Democratic National Convention, delegates were in a mood to celebrate and to make history. Chelsea Clinton, daughter of the 42nd president, introduced her mother, who hopes to become the 45th.
I'm voting for a fighter who never, ever gives up. and who believes that we can always do better when we come together and we work together.
And in a city made famous by America's founding fathers, Hillary Clinton stepped into the spotlight to make some history of her own as the first woman presidential nominee of a major political party.
And so, my friends, it is with humility, determination, and boundless confidence in America's promise that I accept your nomination for President of the United States.
In a preview of the tough campaign to come, Clinton took steady aim at the man she'll run against in November, Republican Donald Trump.
Imagine him in the Oval Office facing a real crisis. A man you can bait with a tweet is not a man we can trust with nuclear weapons.
Clinton vowed to focus on creating jobs and growing the economy, and she pledged to work for national unity if elected in November.
So let's be stronger together, my fellow Americans. Let's look to the future with courage and confidence. Let's build a better tomorrow for our beloved children and our beloved country. And when we do, America will be greater than ever. Thank you, and may God bless you and the United States of America.
Afterward, Clinton was joined on stage by her husband, Bill, and daughter, as well as her vice presidential running mate, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine. The focus on the Democratic convention did not keep Republican Donald Trump off the campaign trail. Trump offered himself as an agent of change at a rally in Iowa.
We can't go for another 4 years of Obama because that's basically what crooked Hillary Clinton is. We can't go for another 4 years of Obama.
With both party conventions now over, the focus is on two presidential candidates with high negative ratings from voters, says veteran analyst Gerald Seib.
It may be a very messy one, maybe an ugly one, maybe a not nice one. I mean, I think a lot of this campaign, whether people like it or not, and I don't like it, is going to be about convincing voters to vote against the other person, not for this person. And that inevitably produces a very ugly campaign.
Trump got a boost in the polls after the Republican convention in Cleveland last week. And now Clinton and the Democrats are hoping for a bump of their own as they shift into general election mode for November. Jim Malone, VOA News, at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
And that report by Jim Malone brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you on a positive note with the song Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a call that Peter scold after story had never been told. So now you see the light, hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high.
We have been listening to Bob Marley with the song Get Up, Stand Up. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Stand up for your rights. Get up.